you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that makes you feel real good. I need somebody to say that. Yeah, but do you think I let her get away with that mess?
You didn't let her get away with it, man.
Not me.
Goody, goody, indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce a man whose reaction may have been goody, goody when he received a call on his birthday, January 8th, with some information. Welcome to the show, Anthony Gordine. And did I pronounce your name right? Is it Anthony Gordine?
You see, down in Charleston, South Carolina, where my father comes from, they say Gordine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I answer to all of them. It's okay.
I'm Ronnie Allen, and I am talking to a man who also answers to the name of Little Anthony. That's easier to say. Now, what information did you receive on January 8th, your birthday?
Well, the information that I received on my birthday was we were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That was one of the best birthdays I've ever had.
You're not officially inducted yet. That's going to happen, is it April or May?
April the 4th is when we get inducted. I'm going to be in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm going to be looking forward to that because it's got some really interesting people, the class of 2009. We got Metallica. Yeah, Bobby Womack that I know very, very well. We've known him back in the days of Sam Cooke. And Run DMC. I can't believe Red Run's going to be there. We have Wanda Jackson, who was a rockabilly singer back in the 50s.
She's being inducted as an influence.
Yeah, it's a special induction. And then Jeff Beck. So it's really a wonderful thing. There's going to be so many people going to be there. They tell me Rod Stewart, Billy Joel, all goes on and on and on and on and on. We cast of thousands. And it's being televised by VH1.
What members of the group are going to be inducted?
All of them, actually. We talked about that. Tracy Lawrence is going to be inducted posthumously. Nathaniel Rogers, because those are two guys that started with us. We'll present their awards to them when we get back to New York. I mean, not least his surviving wife and his children and family, Tracy. And Nathaniel will give it when we see him. And then Sammy Strang came with us in 1960, was with us all the way to 1972. And then Harold Jenkins will be there singing, who's been with us off and on for the last 40-something years. So everybody with Little Anthony Imperials are being inducted.
Do we mention Clarence? I forgot. There was Clarence.
Clarence is the group. He's the founder. You see?
He's the founding member. So
obviously, I didn't go any further than that. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Three of us have been together from the beginning, from the very beginning.
Anthony, before we go any further, I want you to help clear something up. You and I had a little discussion prior to this interview about something that you would like to really tell the world. It has to do with the way that people try to characterize your group in a certain way. So let's set the record straight right now. How would you characterize the music that you do, and how would you not characterize it? You know what I'm getting at.
It's pop, rhythm, and blues. You know, this is one of the conceptions of, what is it, perception is reality in some cases, but I'd like to set the record straight and explain why. I've been saying it for years, and if anybody has seen Little Anthony Pierce and really think about it, we're not a doo-wop group. There's a misconception, and that misconception comes out of New York City where we're from. Now, the word doo-wop was created by somebody, I'm not really sure who it is. What it means is, back in the middle 50s to the late 50s, so many, even early 50s, there were so many black groups that were singing what we call race music. So we and then it was turned to rhythm and blues, okay? It was not to be listened by the majority of the white folks in the United States of America because it was called race music. We don't want to be involved with that, race music. So we sang a thing called R&B, and groups like the Flamingos, the Orioles, the Moongos, oh, most of all, you know, Sincerely, that's not doo-wop, okay? All of these groups that came up, El Dorados, I can go on and on, but I won't go that far because it would take too much time.
Yeah,
but
right.
Hundreds of groups generally who at that time were out there singing and doing their thing, they were R&B groups as far as we were concerned. Our music was being played on R&B stations, you know, wasn't being played anywhere else. But what happened was, a lot of the white groups began to develop, and they tried to sing with the soul or the feel of the R&B singers, but they couldn't do it. It just didn't come out right. In other words, you know, Frankie Lyman came up with Uli Papa Cow, Papa Cow, Papa. They, you know, right. Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers did that, and then the other black groups tried to top that. The Heartbeats came out with Chop 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 Wee-oo, and that came later, like in the middle, and they did it with such flair and such coolness. You know, it was so cool. It was like cool. It was our identity. Then the white groups, like the Elegants, Dion and the Belmonts, and all these groups, and there's many more, they couldn't emulate that. So they started to create their own sound. Ba 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 ran ba ba. You know, they start doing stuff like that, and do wop a do wop a do wop a do wop. That's where that do wop comes from. So they did it their way, and somehow along the period of time, they began to lump the groups together. Now, I really equate this to promoters who really looked at this thing and said, "Oh, we can make money if we can kind of lump it together and give it a name." You understand? They couldn't call one thing, and then the other, the other. So somebody back there began to say doo-wop, and then as time went by, that label went on. Now, you said, did we do a doo-wop song? Does it sound like a doo-wop song? Yeah, we did a thing called Traveling Stranger when I was with the Chesters. That's nothing to do with Little Anthony Imperials. That's something that goes back a long time ago. Do you call just the kinds of people of the world a doo-wop? I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't think it is. Tears of My Pillow is definitely pop, okay? Yeah. Shimmy Shimmy Coco Bop is a novelty. And, of course, the years we spent with Teddy Randazzo and Don Costa, oh,
right.
Goodness, man, now we win another level. Because he once told me, I recorded Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra, and so many artists, and you reminded me as of when they were young. So, kid, let me teach you how to sing. You know, we got violins and 40, 50, 60 pieces. That's why when we did the Letterman show, we had 40-something pieces, because Paul Schaefer knew that. He wanted to present us
right.
The way we should be. Going out of my head is not doo-wop. Come on.
Yeah,
I just want to set this straight. I'm not mad with people who sing doo-wop, but our becoming a known act did not come by singing those kind of songs that were back in the 50s. There's a tendency for people wanting to go back to a certain era, and after a while, they've been conditioned to believe that by promoters, by the advertisement, by the marketing, that everything and every group that came out of the 50s just sings doo-wop. And then you get a lot of the black groups, they need money.
Yeah.
They're not doing that well. So they just say, oh, okay, if you want to call me a doo-wop group, I'm a doo-wop group. That's what's happened. But this group has been together for 50 years. We have worked with some of the finest musicians, some of the finest performers in the world. We hung out with Sammy Davis Jr. We spent time with Red Fox, Moms Mabley. I can tell you things that will blow your mind. Well, I'll put in the book. I'll wait till I put in the book.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
And the education that we got from these people. When we sing, it's not that. We are pop R&B singers.
Right.
Our music is pop and R&B.
Anthony, I don't think you could possibly have done a better job setting the record straight than you just did now. I think you made it quite clear, and I believe that the DJ that named it doo-wop may have been the late Gus Gossard.
I don't know. I was too busy being Little Anthony and the Imperials.
Now, before Little Anthony and the Imperials, you were the group called the Chesters. How did the Imperials form?
Well, between you and I, the Chesters are the Imperials. The name was changed when we got our contract with N and Gone Records, George Golder decided to change it, and Lou Galley, who was the artistic director there, decided to change the name and didn't like it. I'm glad they did. They said they wanted something regal, so they came up with the idea Imperial. Now, many people have come to us with collective items. There was about 1,000 or more records released that said Imperials, which is my pillow, and just the kinds of people in the world on the backside. And then what happened was Alan Freed in 1958 was the biggest thing on the planet. He was a peaking then. He just was talking, and I had met Alan many, many years before that when I was with a group called the DuPonts. That's where I opened the show for him. And he didn't really remember who I was. He didn't know the same guy because I wasn't even singing the same style, you know? And he says, man, that girl sure can sing. And this is legend, what they tell me. And one of the record promoters says, no, that's not a girl. That's the guy. Gosh, she's got to be a little guy. They have a voice that high. And ladies and gentlemen, Little Anthony and the Imperial. Well, the record company, not missing a good thing, recalled all the records.
To make it clear to our audience, the original pressings just said Imperials on them. They didn't say Little Anthony.
Absolutely, and then many collectors have sold us the record. We signed them for them.
Now, Alan Freed came up with Little Anthony and had nothing to do with your height.
No, he's assumed that I'm 5'8½". Well, I was once. I'm getting older now. Now I'm getting short. I'm going to be a little But he just assumed his instincts were that way.
Wow.
He just said Little Anthony. No one knows why he said that.
Did you like the name Little Anthony?
No, I really didn't. It didn't fit me, first of all. But then it caught on so big, and we started moving into superstar status. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, well, I guess I won't change that. And when you gotta understand something, I was 17 years old. Who knew?
Two people in the world, I believe, was supposed to be the A-side of the record, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure was. Supposed to be the A-side. And what it was that we did Just the Kinds of People in the World, and we had another song that Ernest wrote. He wrote Just the Kinds of People in the World, and Cha-Cha Henry. Little novelty song. Didn't like the Cha-Cha Henry deal. You know what I mean? So he told us, look, you know that song I told you to look at and listen to? Did you listen to it? I said, well, one time or two. So I want you to go right now in the room and learn it.
Uh-huh.
We'll give the band an hour break, and I want you to come back, and I'll give you the words. Have the words written out for you. Just get the melody right. And I'm very good at getting melodies very quickly in my brain. It's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
I got it in about 5 minutes, the melody, and then I read it as I was singing it. The original thing was supposed to be Just the Kinds of People in the World, A-side,
right. Sasha
Henry, the B-side. But then Tears on My Pillow shook up the joint. They thought that Just the Kinds of People was great. It would have been a hit. But actually, George had admitted, and Richard Barrett, who was A&R man at that time, a terrible mistake.
Right.
Made two mistakes. They turned down The Diary by Neil Sedaka, who wrote that for me. After we recorded it once, just to show how I would do it, and then they made a mistake by leaving Cha-Cha Henry on the back B-side, and then releasing the second record, Just the Kinds of People in the World, which really, it would have been fabulous. They didn't do it.
Here's a little bit of Two People in the World.
Just two kinds of people in the world.
Sound, and what an endearing one after all these years, along with the one that we're going to play right now, which is Tears on My Pillow. Who wrote Tears on My Pillow?
Al Lewis and Sylvester Bradford. In fact, Sylvester Bradford just passed away about 2.5 months ago.
Who are the personnel on this particular record, on Tears on My Pillow? It's you and Clarence and...
Yeah, and Ernest. And Ernest, we're there from the very beginning. You know, each other since we were about 8, 9 years old. So
you Clarence, and Ernest, and the fourth member was...
And the next one would be Tracy Lord, who passed away a couple of years ago. And the other one was Nathaniel Rogers, who sang bass.
We're going to listen to it right now, and boy, this is a classic. It's hard to believe this is, what, 50 years old now? 51?
Yeah,
51 years old, because we're in 2009 right now. What a wonderful, enduring sound, and it is not a doo-wop record. This is a pop record, Tears on My Pillow.
Ooh.
Ted Lampney and the Imperials, Tears on My Pillow. And I'm Ronnie Allen, so happy to be talking with one of the inductees in the class of 2009, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Incidentally, the starting record on the show that you heard, Goody Goody, was from a live CD, which is called, I just hid the title here, it's Live Up Close and Personal, which came later.
I just
wanted to let people know where I got Goody Goody.
Actually, that song was made very famous by the late Judy Garland.
Initially it was, and then eventually Frankie Lyman did a great version.
Frankie Lyman had a big hit on it.
Yes, he did.
And then I always loved that song. I thought it was the cutest song on the planet, so I recorded it.
Shimmy Shimmy Coco Bop was a definite change of pace. I mean, there was no connection between that one and Tears on My Pillow. It was a novelty record. Was it a real
novelty record that came almost a year and a half later?
Yeah. Was it a real dance or was it a fake dance?
It was a fake dance. What happened was a kid from Brooklyn, I can't remember his name, wrote this song. When they came to us, George Stone, he says, "Oh, I believe in this song." And I said, "I can't sing that. I'd be laughed out of the business. That is bubblegum music. We can't do that." But he had a vision. Somehow he believed if he could create a dance, all those songs that people were doing, the stroll, you know what I mean? Stroll.
Yeah.
Again, they were trying to get the momentum back. And not if they didn't. Because the song, at first, didn't do anything. The first, I would say, 2 months. Then all of a sudden, every mother and they all went out going to the record stores asking for the little children of 8 and 7 years old. But give me, Coco Pop. That made it a hit. I've actually had congressmen in our Congress, and Colin Powell, and many people that we have performed for, told me they were those kids, the leaders and the shakers of this world.
When you did Shimmy Shimmy Coco Bop, when you performed it, I mean, did you come up with your own little dance to it? Did you make up steps?
I didn't care about that song. Nobody in the group did. We didn't give a darn, you know? we were in litigation. We knew we were going to be with him, the company long. Okay, let them do what they want to do. But lo and behold, the song went into the top, what is it?
It got to number 24 in Billboard.
Right.
We'll take a listen to it right now. This is not a doo-wop record, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody's called this one the doo-wop anyway.
I don't know what you call this record. This song.
That's a crazy song called Shimmy, Shimmy, Coco Bop. Shimmy Shimmy Coco Bop, which kind of marked the end of your career on End. The end of the end.
Mm-hmm. I think that Bob Dylan or somebody said, when Shimmy Shimmy was made at the end, he said, this is the end of rock and roll. But we were being watched by a lot of people we didn't know, and a lot of people were influenced by us. Many major artists today have been influenced by us, and it's blowing our mind to find out one of the reasons why we end up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I want to do a shout-out to somebody very, very special, and I assume you appeared on his TV show many times, Clay Cole.
Yeah, Clay. Hi, Clay. You're listening.
Clay's listening. I guarantee you.
Clay could make the record straight, but I believe it was 1960 or 61 or something. Clay Cole was coming up in New York City at that time, becoming a very powerful, powerful, powerful man in New York City. He got really big, and he put on a show at the Brooklyn Paramount to follow in the footsteps of Alan Freed, and it was packed. And in that show, if you ask Clay if he remembers, was Chubby Checka, Brenda Lee, us, the guys out of Pittsburgh, Blue Moon, Marcells, the Vibrations, as far as my mind goes.
What a show that must have been.
Well, it was about 12 acts, and they packed the place, and they did really well, and he really got big, and had the TV show, which we did, the television show.
Yeah.
Clay is another man that people have missed. And talk about Cousin Brucey, talk about all these people, you know, all the great ones that have come through during that time. Clay was so big, so fast. It was like a shooting star. I wish someone would really begin to investigate this man's influence over the business we know as rock and roll, because he had a tremendous influence.
Clay has a website, www.claycoleshow.com. That's claycoleshow.com. A little bit later on in the show, what is Anthony's favorite song? We're going to find out a little bit later on. But right now, we're going to go to another phase of your career. We're talking around 1964, and you started working with a gentleman named Don Costa, and the record label was DCP, Don Costa Productions.
Right, right. It was distributed by United Artists, yes.
And you did something called I'm on the Outside Looking In.
At one point there, the guys got very discouraged. And I got discouraged because after we left N Records, you know, those days you'd get blackballed. You know what I mean? Blacklisted. We just couldn't legally do what we wanted to do. So everybody got very discouraged just sitting around. You know, we want to record, we want to do other things. So the group momentarily said, you know, maybe we all should do something on our own, go off and do whatever. And I went off and tried to get in the acting field because that's where I started. A lot of people don't know. I began my career as a child actor, by the way.
No, I didn't know that.
I don't know that. Yeah, when I was about 10, 11 years old. And I did a lot of plays in New York City and off-Broadway and stuff. But anyway, when I was with a group called the DuPont, and I opened at the New York Paramount of Alan Freed, well, there was a young man on that show by the name of Teddy Randazzo, and he was with a group called the Chuckles.
Oh.
The Chuckles.
Yes.
Remember that movie Rock Around the Clock or Rock Rock or something? Very handsome guy.
Yes.
And he had a New York accent, so they dubbed in some kind of Hollywood. In those days, you know, the day they're looking for people with a New York accent. But then it was cool. So he came to the scene, and he remembered me, because when I was a kid, I had to be about 15 when I met him. He said to me, someday, we'll work together. You got a heck of a voice, kid. We're going to work together someday. Well, guess what? About 9 years went past, and darn if we didn't. And what happened was, my manager at that time was Ernie Martinelli, and he was trying to look for a record deal, because finally we were able to release some of our obligations. So the guys, we sort of drifted away, and actually Ernie Martinelli ran into Teddy walking down Broadway one day, and Teddy asked him, somebody told me you're managing Laurent Capirro, so I really would like to see these guys. I want to talk to them. And then Ernie called us and said, you guys want to get back together and do this because there's somebody wants to meet you. And so we said, ooh, well, his name is Teddy Randazzo, and he knows Anthony, and he would like to see if you guys would like to regroup. And we went up to Don Costa's office right off of Broadway and talked, and he said, look, fellas, I'd like to record you. Like that. Teddy says, Anthony has a great voice, a lot of listening stuff you did, and we believe we have something for you that could make things better. He says, hi, Teddy, I'm seeing you since I don't know when. He said, yeah, I told you we're going to work together someday. He played a song for us called Outside Looking In, and we listened to it, and we knew, wow, that's a nice song. It was different. You know why? Because it had a pop, pop sound, but yet it had soul to it. And so we signed a contract, and then they found out that I couldn't get out of a contract with Roulette Records. Don Costa put in a call to Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra, a very powerful man in those days, put in a call to somebody, and I was released out of my contract.
And you were able to
go any further with that.
Did Don Costa produce the record, or did Teddy Randazzo produce it?
Actually, Don produced it, Teddy wrote and arranged and everything.
It got to number 15 on the chart, and this is 1964 we're talking about. We're going to listen to it right now. Little Anthony and the Imperials, I'm on the Outside Looking In.
looking in. And I wanna be back on the inside with you. You are with somebody new, and I don't know what to do, 'cause I'm still in love with you.
In love with you.
I'm on the outside looking in. I don't wanna be left on the outside all alone. Well, I guess I've had my day, and you let me go my way. Now it's me who has to pay. I never should have gone away. I never should have gone away and left you like I did, with tears in your eyes. I thought you'd take me back, but now, to my surprise, I'm on the outside looking in. Gotta find a way back to your heart, dear. Once again, won't you take me back again? I'll be waiting here till then, on the outside looking in. Won't you take me back again? I'll be waiting here till then, on the outside looking in. On the outside looking in.
I'm on the outside looking in, Little Anthony and the Imperials. I'm Ronnie Allen talking to Anthony, who is going to very shortly be one of the latest members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Very deservedly so, and I am just absolutely thrilled. And we are just a few moments away from finding out what Anthony's favorite song is. But before we get to it, we're going to hear one that I'm sure he doesn't mind too much either. It's called Going Out of My Head, the follow-up.
I'm going to tell you a little story about that. After we had the success with Outside Looking In, we were saying, wow, you know. And by that time, Murray Dickey became the name in New York City. Big, 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 big. He was the one that introduced the Beatles in the country. He knew us from back when. So we hit it off. I mean, we all liked each other. It was not just a disc jockey, but we were friends. And he was the biggest thing on WINS Wins in New York City. We did this Outside Looking In, and Murray took it over, and we did so well that we started doing the Murray shows at the Brooklyn Fox, and we developed a reputation as being a performing act. Now, the reason why I said that, here's where it becomes very interesting. You see, a lot of acts in those days that we came up with, they were recording stars, but managers and promoters, you know, they're constantly telling them how great they are, how good they are, best, you're the best, you're the best, you know what I mean? Never really telling them that what goes up comes down. Prepare yourself for that time. You have to do what we call transition. We have to transition. And what they didn't teach these guys, which we got through being with Teddy Randazzo and Don Costa and Mons Mabing, Red Fox, all these people became our friends, and Sammy Davis, all of them, they would always tell us, you know, you can't forever sing hit records. I mean, you could, but most don't. You better prepare yourself to become performing artists. So a lot of those acts today that do those theme shows or OC shows or whatever you want to call them, they still walk out there doing the same songs, trying to emulate themselves 50 years ago. They're 50 years older, you know what I mean? A lot of them have lost their voices. A lot of them can't do it, you know? And a lot have died, or the groups, they're not the same. And they go out and they do this, and what happened was they've been victimized twice. You know what I'm saying? Because they're not recording stars anymore. You know who's recording stars? Beyonce is. Christine Aguilera is. Jay-Z is. They are the recording stars of today. And so those acts that didn't make that transition are really limited in what they can do, how they're promoted, how they're booked. So consequently, a lot have just do that circuit. They just don't ever come off that circuit. And they look at us and they go, well, how did you guys do it? Well, it's like the grasshopping and the ants, you know?
Right.
The ants said, you better put some stuff away for the winter, you know? And the ants did, the grasshopper did, and we almost froze. After we did Outside Looking In, Teddy went to Europe for something, promotion or something. I believe it was about 2:30 in the morning, the phone rang, woke me up, and it was from Europe. It was Teddy's, man, I'm getting on the plane such and such and such and such and such a time. You know what I mean? I want you guys in the office at 2:30. My plane gets in at 12. I'll be at the office at 2:30. I've got to play you this song that I wrote in Europe. You got to hear this. I want to know what you feel about this. So we all went over. We sat around that piano. We had this wall piano. It was the greatest piano. More hits came out of that wall piano than anywhere in the world. And he starts playing this thing. Teddy was very emotional, you know, singing it. And we sat looking at each other, and then he bang, dun, da, dun, 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 da, dum, da, da, da. And there was a silence for a moment. And everybody looked at each other and said, oh my gosh, this is, we knew. I said, if I can pull this off and the group can pull this off, it's huge. Don knew it. We all knew it.
One of the charms of this particular song is that it just builds. It just builds.
Yeah, that's what I said. Even in the room, when he ends up with this boom, this big fist.
Yeah.
He said, whoa.
Well, I think I'm going out of my head. Yes, I think I'm going out of my head over you. Over you. I want you to want me. So badly, I can't think of anything but you. And I think I'm going out of my head, 'cause I can't explain the tears that I shed over you. Just walk past me, you don't even know that I exist. Going out of my head, over you. Out of my head, over you. Out of my head, day and night, night and day and night. All right, I'm a little
Anthony and the Imperials, going out of my head. I'm Ronnie Allen talking to Anthony, kind of walking through memory lane through your fantastic career, which has lasted over 50 years. And you're not just singers, you're entertainers.
That's what we meant when we said we became performing artists. All that comes from the formula we were taught, and we developed it. And we didn't know, really, that we were developing our career.
Now, when did you do the live, up close, and personal CD?
1996.
We opened the show with Goody Goody, and right now, those that have this CD, track 8, says Anthony's favorite song, but that's dialogue. You're talking about it. I'm going to play track 8, and then I'm going to play track 9, which is a live version of your favorite song. So, ladies and gentlemen, in Anthony's own words, we are now going to find out what his favorite song is.
You know, of all the songs in Beatles and I recorded, this song by far is my favorite.
This is my favorite as well, Anthony. This is a groovy song.
Groovy?
Like I said, my favorite. And I hope while I'm singing this song, I don't start crying up here. I don't want to cry, because if I cry, I'm going to blow my nose. Because every time I hear the introduction of this song, it reminds me of my first love affair. I was 12 years old. And I was happy. I was happy until she came into my life. Broke my little heart. Well, I hope this song doesn't bring any unpleasant memories like that to you folks. I just hope you will enjoy it. I know you don't know what I'm going through. Standing here, looking at you. Well, let me tell you that it hurts so bad. It makes me feel so bad.
You know, that was Anthony's favorite song.
That's my favorite recorded song, actually, and so not only mine, but some of the biggest performers in the world told me this. Love that song.
Hurts so bad. You heard what Anthony said at the beginning of the show, and if you want to still consider Little Anthony and the Imperials a doo-wop act, let me just read you a few of the songs on this live LP, and you may change your mind. That great doo-wop sound, Neutron Dance.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and of course, the inevitable doo-wop song that everybody loves, Wind Beneath My Wings.
Yeah.
Give me a break, ladies and gentlemen.
Great doo-wop song, yeah.
Right.
And it's not the public's fault. It's how you perceive.
Clarence was kind enough to send me a couple of other CDs. I want to talk about pure a cappella. Now, did this come out in the 90s as well?
No, this came out in 2003.
Now, for those who are not familiar with the term a cappella, I don't know exactly what the translation is. I guess it's from another language, but
No, it's from Italian.
Italian?
But without music.
Without music. You're allowed to snap your fingers, you're allowed to clap your hands, and you're allowed to sing, but you can't have any musical instruments.
There's no musical instruments behind you, no.
Now, there are so many good recordings from this CD called Pure A Cappella. I've created a little medley of some of the highlights. Little Anthony and the Imperials, Pure A Cappella.
Why do fools fall in love? Why do birds sing in love? Love is a way to break today. Why do they fall in love? I'll be home, my darling. Please wait there for me.
Wait for me.
We'll stroll along together. Once more, how love will be free at least. As we strove along together, holding hands, walking all alone. So in love, are we two, that we don't know what to do? So in love,
so in love,
in a world of our own,
so in love, Georgia. But I really must say, good night, sweetheart, good night.
All I could say is, wow, who needs musical instruments? But then again, of course, now if I say that, then I make enemies of musicians out there.
There's a lot of groups, and great groups, Big Six and all these kind of groups, and all of them are very good at doing that. It's a very difficult thing to do. You've got to have a tremendous air. You have to really know how to sing, and you really have to understand what you're doing because it is very difficult.
I saved one that I have not played, which is a song that a lot of people may not be familiar with from the Pure A Cappella CD, and it's called I'll Be Forever Loving You.
El Dorados, yeah.
El Dorados, the group that did Crazy Little Mama.
When that song, that goes back, we were talking about doo-wop and how the black groups are making that different sound that those groups in New York couldn't emulate. That's one of those songs. Oh, doobop, shoo-ba-ba-ba-ba, doobop-bop, oh, doobop, shoo-ba-ba-ba-ba. And those are uniquely black, and they couldn't do it. So that explains my case.
Wait a minute, Anthony. You got a few other riffs you could just do right now? I love that one. You got any others?
No, that's enough for me.
That was it. I want to bottle that one. In its entirety right now, this is Little Anthony and the Imperials, a cappella, I'll Be Forever Loving You.
Is it yes or is it no? Should I stay and be happy here or should I go? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. Does your heart beat like mine? Do you sometimes think that you had too much wine? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. When you're near me, everything
you're gone. I feel like I'm in need when you smile. I feel so gay. Is it yes or is it no? Should I stay and be happy there or should I go? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. When you're near me, everything is alright. When you're gone, I feel like I'm in need. When you smile, I feel so gay. Is it yes or is it no? Should I stay and be happy here, or should I go? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. Oh. Or is it yes?
I'll be forever loving you, little Anthony and the Imperials, and I'm kind of pinching myself. I feel I've gone to oldies music heaven, and I didn't even have to die. It's just a wonderful, it's a wonderful feeling, and I will just tell you how thrilled I will be to watch that show in April and see you get inducted.
You'd be on VH1 too, all over the world.
I would assume you might do Tears on My Pillow. Maybe you do a medley. I don't know what. Have you thought about what?
No, I'm going to use it as a surprise. We don't know. Paul Schaefer is the musical conductor, and we actually are doing a concert there for the Hall of Fame prior to that day with all the members, everybody, the guests are coming to the concert. So we're going to have some pretty big people out there watching the show. I don't know what Paul Schaefer, we talked about it briefly. Mm-hmm. Paul said he'll be calling me pretty soon and kind of going over, what do you think? You know, because they asked us, can we do three? Because really, the Metallica probably won't do as many, you know, or maybe one or something if they decide to do it. You, as rich as they are, you have those decisions you can make. But we said we're available. If they want 3 to 5, 6, 8, 9, whatever.
Whatever they want, you will do. I'm going to bring up something that most of the world probably does not know about you, and you confided this to me yesterday, and that was you're an opera fan?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. My music teacher, which is Mrs. Ephemanics in PS 67, was also Clarence's, was also Ernest's. We all went to the same elementary school. She was the first, this was a white lady who was so kind, so good. She, all she wanted to do was to build the cultural things of kids, but not necessarily where they live in their little world in Brooklyn and the streets and running around, and that was the world. So she had a thing called music appreciation every week, and so we had to listen to it. Now, there are a lot of kids. Most kids didn't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that stuff, you know? But for some strange reason, me, Clarence, and Ernest, we would just hang around and listen to it, and we got a taste for it. Then we learned about the masters, everything from Beethoven to Liszt to Franz Liszt to Wagner to, I can go on and on. The masters were the ones that actually did the musical operas, you know, or wrote the arias and all that kind of stuff. Then one day our manager, who liked it too, took us to see Madhavani at Carnegie Hall. And so it grew and grew and grew and grew. And then we started going to Metropolitan Opera. Then we got to know a lot of opera stars. And actually was going to do Ness and Dorma, which the late Pavarotti did. No one will ever do it as good as he did it, but we're ready to put that in the show. But at that time, we never got around to it, and Sammy retired, so we said, maybe we put it off. And then when Pavarotti died, I said, nah, I'm not going to attack that. I think Aretha Franklin did a great job on it when she replaced him at the Grammys one year. And we love it, and we love classical music, and there you go.
You're going to be going to Italy to see some operas?
Yeah, I'm trying to get to Italy next year. I'm trying to get to La Scala. There's a certain time of year they do that stuff.
Are we going to see any operatic influence in any of the Little Anthony material of the future, possibly?
I don't know. I never say no to anything. We're crazy. We've done everything. Yeah, we don't know. It could happen.
You never know. And speaking of you never know, we're winding down the show. Clarence sent me a CD called You'll Never Know. When did this one come out?
This came out about a month and a half ago.
I listened to this one, and ladies and gentlemen, it is not doo-wop.
I hate to tell people that if they're listening for something, I'm not really sure what it is, but I can guarantee them it's music.
I think it has kind of a jazz influence. And
because that's our influence too, jazz. You know, and I knew a lot of people. I knew Miles, I knew Elvis Gerald, I knew them all. So This is sort of a dedication to them, and we actually took Going Out of My Head and we put it into a slow time jazz movement, a smooth jazz sound, to see what happened. And I think it was a marvelous thing when it came out. We're very happy with it. And as creative people, all creative people, we're artists. Yes. We really like to do something we feel is special. And we have to be true to our art. That's what we say. So we did it.
What I'm going to play from this is track one, I Ain't Fallen.
By Jim Gilstrap.
I cannot thank you enough for agreeing to honor me with being able to do this particular show with you. And I want to wish you and the rest of the group continued success. Have a great 2009. I know that it's going to be a really, really special time just a few months from right now. I'll be one of the millions of people watching that. Everybody's just so proud of
you. Thank you so much, Bonnie. And you know, when I got the call from you and we talked about how the interview was going to go, I said, I don't want to do the same old type of interviews. And then you sent me some of the stuff. You told me to go on your website, and I would tell everybody to go on Ronnie's website.
Well, it's actually the website. I want to give credit to it's the Jersey Girls Sing website. It's Denise Ferry and Bernadette Carroll. And they've allowed me to have my radio page on their website, and so they're the ones that deserve the credit. But
I've been interviewed.
So you've listened to a couple of the interviews, at least. You listened to Jimmy Rogers, I know. You told me you listened to
that. That blew me out of the room, and that's when I told clients, yes, I want to talk to this man.
All right, we're going to close right now. This is my personal favorite because I think the song is so pretty. Was this a song that Teddy Randazzo wrote? Take me back.
Yes, Teddy wrote that song, and we did it with the 101 Strings in Europe. We did it by tracks. It was the first songs ever done by track. We were the first to do a track in one country and then do the voice in another. We actually were the first.
101 Strings?
101 Strings, yeah. That's a very famous string section back in the 50s and 60s.
Well,
some doo-wop song, huh?
Yeah. If a couple of guys didn't show up, you would never know. It was actually 99 strings. I don't think anybody would know the difference, but...
Right. What do you call themselves?
Ronnie Getting Silly. Any rate, we're going to go from the ridiculous to the sublime right now. What a great recording this is. Anthony, all the best to you.
Thank you very much, Ronnie, and to your fans and to the folks out there. Thanks for listening to me ramble.
Take me back, I'm begging, please. Take me back, I'm on my knees. For you to scold me, hurt me, hold me, darling, take me back when you belong to me. I have a jealous mind. Too late I learned that you were not the cheating kind. Take me back, I'm begging, please. Take me back, I'm on my knees. For you to scold me, hurt me, hold me, darling. Take me back, my jealous eyes have learned to take a look or two. They were too blind to see that I was losing you. Take me back, I'm begging, please. Take me back, I'm on my knees. For you to scold me, hurt me, hold me, darling. Take me back, they say you live and learn. And though I've tried before, I promise never to be jealous anymore. Take me back.